Mr. Peets, good morning to you.
Morning.
Chief Justice, Your Honors, may it please the court. Forrest Peets, O'Neill, Nebraska. I'm here representing the defendant, Danny McGinn. This is a criminal case, a misdemeanor, DUI, out of the County Court of Holt County. The main issue that I'm here before you this morning is regarding the impact of Section 60-619-9 in the Nebraska statutes regarding competency of breath test results when a defendant is not given his opportunity for a second test as provided in the statute. The issue was raised initially by motion to suppress in front of Judge Taylor in the county court. She overruled and denied it and entered a written opinion, which I'll get to later. At trial, we conducted a bench trial to preserve the issue for appeal, and the objection was made again in front of Judge Burdick, and he basically, literally on the record, said he was deferring to the judge that already had decided that. He'd just taken the bench about a month before, or even less than that bench trial. He then allowed the test in, convicted the defendant, and sentenced him, and then we perfected our appeal to the district court. And this is where it gets tricky for me, because in these cases where you go county, district, the district judge actually agreed with me. He found a violation of the statute and that the breath test was inadmissible. However, he went on to sustain the conviction, finding other evidence to support, thereby considering the actual breath test, the result of a .128, I believe, which was a complaint alleged a violation by being over a certain...
What's before us then? Is it the refusal of the breath test? Is it the conviction on other grounds? What are we to consider?
Your Honor, that's an excellent question. The state's brief said the only issue before you is the statutory problem, whether that was correct or not. However...
Did the state appeal the decision from the district court?
No. So the only issue...
What impact does that have on us? Any?
Well... Again, I don't. Another excellent question, but I think that's why I argued in my brief that the both points, just in case, and also address the sufficiency of the evidence question, because the scope of review is clear. It's error on the record. You look to see if the decision is sustained by competent evidence, if there wasn't arbitrary and capricious, and is conformity with the law, and not arbitrary and capricious. So, the district judge ruled as he did and found sufficient other facts. So if you bear with me, I'll go ahead and address.
Was the district court's ultimate finding that there was, that it was harmless error?
Well, yes, because he, in his opinion, he cited the cases that say you can prove this charge by either the chemical test result or opinion evidence, and that he found sufficient evidence in the record in the form of the field sobriety test to sustain the conviction.
Is there an error of law in that approach?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
Is there an error of law in that approach?
Well, I believe there is. I don't believe he has that opportunity to reweigh the evidence. He's almost like he's the jury then.
This is district court sitting as an appellate court.
Yes, he is sitting as an appellate court. He sits with the same scope of review as yours. And so how you pull out that what I referred to as the linchpin evidence, because we all know that's what it was, this field sobriety test for probable cause, and they were equivocal at best, and you pull that and say, that's okay. I felt like I got tossed a bone, you know. I mean, I won my argument on the statutory question, you know, hooray, but then you read on and you know, your guy's still convicted.
I guess where I was going is, was there something improper about the district court sitting as an appellate court to approach the case in the manner it did?
Well, it was certainly appropriate for him to determine if there was an error of law in the application of the statute. Once he did that, I thought he should be done. But...
And at the county level, what was the breadth of consideration? And was there also consideration at the county court? Did the county court have an opportunity to ignore the testing thing and just go with the conventional testimony about evidence of intoxication?
I don't believe the judge had that opportunity because he heard the chemical test result after I objected and he overruled my objection. Then he receives that evidence and he can't, I mean, I realize judges are supposed to disregard improper evidence, but
does he make any specific findings about why he finds guilt? The county judge?
No. No. And
so would this
obviously I suspicion
would this have been different if it had been a jury trial?
Well, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. I don't think you can put the toothpaste back in the tube for a jury if they've heard that chemical test and then and they convict, and then the district judge says they shouldn't have ever heard that. Well, that's how these cases are prosecuted. We all know that. It's by chemical test. We see few cases done by opinion evidence. And the district judge cited to a couple cases, Green, another one, where there was real egregious conduct by the defendant. I mean, all those things, the erratic drive, the high speed, the swearing, the belligerent. And they say, yeah, you can prove it that way. And I don't disagree with that. However, in this case,
once the district judge decides that the second test, refusal of the second test prevents the admission of the first test, what should the district judge have done at that point?
Dismissed it. Because it wasn't sufficient. The record just doesn't have anything else. So he should have dismissed it. And that's what I'm asking you to do.
Could the district court employ a harmless error analysis at that point?
Well, that's what he did. But I don't believe that was appropriate, no, under the scope of review. And, but he did some, I remember his comment directly to the prosecutor when the prosecutor was arguing this whole business about a physician. I read all these cases. I've never seen any of these cases talk about the physician business, by the way. And yet Judge Taylor said, when she overruled me, this statute only gives you a right to have a physician.
Really? Well, what's the statute say?
Well, the statute, which I happen to have right in front of me, says the person tested shall be permitted to have a physician of his or her choice evaluate his or her condition. And
so the county court were referencing physician was citing the statute.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I think she's correct that you get that, but that's not the only thing you get. And that's what she said. That's all you get.
Well, you get the physician's evaluation.
Yes.
And how's that evaluation completed?
Good question. I mean, I suppose the guy's got to come up to the jail at 1 o'clock in the morning. And so the state said
there's no requirement that they law enforcement transports your client to the hospital for a blood test, is there?
Well, that's what your cases have said, that there is no obligation to do that. And, you know, the evidence shows the hospital, like I could throw a rock at it. It's about a block and a half away from the jail. They take them there all the time until Birchfield came out, and then we don't do it anymore. You're right.
What have our cases said the duty of the law enforcement is at that point? When your client requests a second test, what's the duty of the law enforcement?
Their duty is to not refuse it. Their duty is to not obstruct it. Their duty is to do nothing that would keep it from happening. And in this case, they said, no, you don't get one.
Is that issue in front of us? Is that an issue we're concerned with?
Well, you know, that's what's got me a little nervous. Hopefully, no. The district judge ruled it's done, it's over with, so, and they didn't appeal it. But, you know, I'm never real sure about that, so I'm covering it all. And I'm suggesting that the district court was correct in throwing the test out. He was incorrect in not dismissing the case, and I'm going to ask you to reverse it. But I was getting at, he asked the state's attorney, he said, well, because he was saying, he got a right to a phone call. Judge Kozacek says, well, why would he call a judge to get him up here when the officer's already told him he ain't going to get a blood test? It's not going to happen.
Call a doctor, you mean? Why would he call a doctor?
Why would he call a doctor, a physician, a doctor, to come up to the jail at 1 in the morning?
Well, that's the obstruction by law enforcement.
Exactly. That's it. And Stephen Binkert is a great guy. I've known him since he was a kid. He's a deputy sheriff. He's honest as the day is long. He and the defendant start talking about this second test as he's bringing him to the jail after the arrest. Because the defendant knew about the statutory right. Law enforcement doesn't have to tell him about it. They don't have to transport it. They don't have to lay out a red carpet for him. But they can't refuse it. And the cases have said that. If there's a denial, no test for the state. It's due process. It's a fair thing. The statute, the dissent in that one case about this already crippled statute has now been rendered, whatever. If this fact situation doesn't fit the right to have that second test, I don't know if you'll ever have one. But I think this one does. There goes my time, my rebuttal, but I think I've said it all. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Mr. List, good morning to you.
Good morning again. May it please the court, Nathan List, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the Appalachian State of Nebraska.
So what's before us?
As an initial matter, as far as the district court's alternative conclusion that the evidence was nonetheless sufficient on the theory of being under the influence, I would note that the state never charged and pursued that theory. So I think that theory, since it was never charged, is simply inapplicable and irrelevant. The only theory charged...
The finding at that point is inapplicable and irrelevant.
State never charged that theory. The only theory charged in this case was that he was under the influence by virtue of having an alcohol content of 0.08 or more. That was our charge, the only charge. I think we're stuck with the theory charged.
There's no charge of, I'll roughly call the conduct of the defendant.
Right. Typically, you see a DUI charge sold in the alternative. You're under the influence or having an alcohol
or
content of
0.08
or more.
Or conducting yourself this and that way.
It's not how it was charged in this case. It was 0.08 or more.
So the district court's wrong in that respect.
I believe so.
So what are
we left with?
We're left with the charge of 0.08 or more and whether or not the chemical breath test result was properly admitted. Brings us to the analysis of the independent chemical testing statute and whether it was violated. We maintain that it wasn't.
So the district court decided it was not properly administered. So it was not admissible.
Well, that the independent chemical testing statute was violated, right? It didn't find that the initial test was improperly administered.
So the second test, refusal, not allowed, so the first test doesn't come in. That's what the district court decides.
Right.
That appealed by the state.
That was not.
Does that matter?
No.
Why not?
That'd be a question of law. I think here be a question of law as to whether or not that statute was violated or at least with respect to the legal analysis that's controlling on that question. And it's our contention that the county court was correct in its legal analysis and its factual analysis and that the test was properly admitted because the statute wasn't violated.
Well, that we're focusing, right? So the state's position is whether or not it was a correct legal decision by the district court as compared to the legal analysis of the county court.
Well, it's our position that the county court was correct and that the district court was simply incorrect in finding that the county court was wrong in doing its alternative analysis.
And that's the framework. Those are the contours of what's on deck.
Right, right. And you're reviewing, this is an appeal from the district court sitting as an intermediate appellate court from the county court, so we're reviewing the county court's judgment ultimately.
We would not ordinarily reach an issue decided favorably to the appellant and not where no cross appeal is taken by the appellee, would we?
Well, I think it's always a bit different in criminal cases since we don't have a right to cross appeal. In post-conviction cases we do because they're civil in nature, but in a criminal case we don't have that right. So there's really nothing we can do in that regard. It comes up and case is what it is. We're reviewing the judgment. In this case, it's the judgment of the county court that has come up through the district court, but now it's to you reviewing the propriety of the county court judgment.
Okay, the defendant appealed from county court to district court, right?
Right.
And doesn't Thalman teach us something that applies to this?
Tolkien. I could use a little help.
Tolkien. Thank you.
District court sitting as an appellate court, that's Tolkien, is it not?
Yeah, I think it is.
In what regard, or you could help me out here, I'd appreciate it.
The state's opportunities when the district court is sitting as an appellate court.
Oh, right, the fact that there is that ability to appeal, sure, that alternative basis to appeal. I guess I would submit that nonetheless, even if that is, I guess, arguably not a cross appeal, an independent basis to appeal, that we're still reviewing the propriety of the county court's judgment here, and we would submit it was correct. I guess I'm not aware.
The legal issue, you think, is nevertheless in front of us, regardless of what further appellate action the state did or didn't take or may be permitted to take. The legal issue's in front of us.
Right, I mean, it's the county court's judgment of guilt and sentencing, and that's the judgment that has been brought before you, and it's our position that that judgment is correct. But we're not taking issue with the district court's decision on appeal, we're simply arguing that the county court's judgment is correct. They're arguing otherwise, we're arguing that the county court's judgment should remain intact. And ultimately, it comes down to whether or not 60-6199 was violated. It's our position that it wasn't.
How, if we get there, how is this not a refusal? I mean, that there's testimony where the officer is asked, you refuse to let him have a blood test, and he says, yes, sir. I mean, how, in what way is this not a refusal?
Well, I think when you look at that testimony in context, I think it would, at least arguably, convey that law enforcement wasn't going to assist or provide an independent blood test, but it didn't necessarily convey that Mr. McGinn was prohibited from lining up an independent blood test on his own. He was told that he had a right to an independent test at his own expense. I think that should mean something, the fact that he was told at his own expense. He was allowed to use a phone. He was free to arrange for a physician to come to the jail and for purposes of that evaluation or testing. Nobody precluded that. The arresting officer was asked if they would have allowed a physician or someone to come into the jail for that purpose, and he said they would have.
Was that conversation had with the defendant at all?
With respect to the physician or whether somebody could come, not to my knowledge. I wish they would have explored that a little bit more. I acknowledge this case is certainly not as clean as YASA. And YASA, you know, they gave an advisement that mirrored the statute, and then, yeah, I mean,
he was told in this case he couldn't have a blood test.
Well, he was told.
Is that right? We don't do blood tests anymore?
Right.
Because of Birchfield or the Supreme Court case? Or
right. It's not entirely clear if law enforcement was just saying, you know, hey, I guess my impression was that the officer was saying, we don't do blood tests.
So they never do blood tests. The doctor does the blood test. The nurse does the blood test.
Well, law right, true.
Does it.
Right, right. I think the law, the officer was basically just saying that we just don't even, we don't deal with blood tests anymore.
Don't you really have an officer here who misunderstood the law and misstated the law?
Well, I mean, potentially, I the safest route as an officer in these situations is to either say nothing at all, or to do, I think, what they did in YASA and just give them an advisement that's going to mirror that statute and say, here it is. You make the call, you do what you want to do. This case, unfortunately, falls in between.
Does it fall in between, or is it worse? I mean, by saying nothing, that would be, here he's, isn't there at least an argument that he's telling the defendant that you're not going to get a blood test?
Well, the question is that what was effectively communicated? Would the, you know, I don't know what the exact analysis would be. Would the average person have understood it to mean that?
Well, I think maybe we're down to we, you know. Is it the royal we, the editorial we? We don't do blood tests.
Right. Well, and that's my pitch for why I think in context it would be conveying that law enforcement, we,
thank you,
don't deal with blood anymore, as opposed to you can't do it in any form or capacity. You have no ability. It doesn't matter if you call a physician.
So who has the burden of proof on that issue?
Well, it's, I mean, typically in a motion to suppress, it's our burden if you're talking about an alleged unconstitutional obtaining of evidence. Here, we're talking about a statutory analysis rather than constitutional. Typically, the burden is on the state in a warrantless motion to suppress. So not sure, Your Honor. Probably ours.
Burden?
Well, I would argue that we did. I'm certainly not in a position to concede that we didn't. You know, I acknowledge that the evidence is close on this one. The only other point I guess I'd make here is that, you know, under our standard of review, typically with a motion to suppress, we're reviewing factual findings for clear error, questions of law de novo. Here, the county court, it heard the evidence. Heard the testimony, found that this officer did not in any way interfere with or impede the defendant's ability to contact a physician and line this up.
Based on the fact that he was allowed a telephone call.
I'm sorry?
Based on the fact that he was allowed a telephone call. Is that right?
Right. Well, and the fact that there was no affirmative discussion about physicians or the fact that you aren't going to be allowed to call a physician. No physician ever showed up and somebody turned them away. I mean, that would be a clear-cut case of refusing somebody's ability to do an independent test. If a physician shows up at the door and you say, sorry, we're not letting you in here. Or even if you ask to call a physician and they say, no, not going to happen, you're not using the phone. So this case, I mean, it didn't go that far, which was part of the county court's analysis, on top of being allowed to use the phone. So I guess in the end, I would submit the argument here, as good as it gets, is that when viewed in context, this was not necessarily a refusal to permit the independent test.
At the trial court level or the district court level, did the appellant raise the limitation of the pleadings that you referred to?
With respect to the state's theory,
being limited to the interpretation of the state's theory.
Did they raise that? Not to my knowledge.
So this is the first time that's been raised, was today?
The fact that the state limited its case to 0.08 or more?
Your interpretation of that, yes.
Yes, to my knowledge. If there are no further questions, I would ask that you affirm the judgment of the county court, I guess. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have, excuse me, do we have time for rebuttal? No time for rebuttal. On we go then to the last case of the day, which is Pontano versus American Blue Ribbon Holdings, LLC.